And I am Melina Budov. This has been a really interesting panel, and I'm glad to be able to sort of connect with the notion of integration and looking at it in a programmatic setting in a kind of what we have considered alternative and yet is becoming primary for all of us in STD control, which is in a jail setting, and that is an adult jail setting. So I will, let's see, how about that? I'm going to talk about the program, and I'd like to most importantly highlight some of the challenges and some of our, you know, what we're doing to address them in this unique setting. Incarcerated women, as we have heard and as we know, very high priority for public health. We've all been asked to, or in the, if you're in a high morbidity area, been asked to address the proportion of women screened for syphilis at jail in many of the larger metropolitan areas. In addition, we have established knowledge that women, and younger women in particular, in adult detention, have high risk for chlamydia, gonorrhea, and HIV. And that, most importantly, we can also remember, bear in mind, that incarceration affords us an opportunity for concentrated access to this sort of high-risk group. What have we been doing in Los Angeles? We've had long-standing relationships with our detention centers. We've had routine chlamydia and gonorrhea screening at intake to the women's jail since the year 2000. And then in 2006, we expanded to integrate syphilis and HIV testing at that same time during booking for women in the jail. We established through a prevalence study in 1999 screening guidelines to inform this our services, and so that's the beginning, which is women who are age 30 or under, pregnant, possibly pregnant, or charged with something sex-related, including prostitution. And then syphilis, as possible, we offer the syphilis and HIV blood draw to whomever's interested. So what are we talking about? What is this setting? Well, in Los Angeles, it's actually technically, I believe, the second largest adult detention system in the country. We have over 162,000 bookings annually, and 12% of those are women. Almost 2,000 women on any given day are incarcerated in the jail, and about 490 women come through per week. All the women, I'll continue through the rest of the presentation to refer to it as CRDF, Century Regional Detention Facility, is where the women are in LA County Jail are kept. And therefore, that's where our services start. Okay, where does it happen? What does it look like? It's a place at CRDF called the Inmate Reception Center, which kind of sounds nice. But it isn't so nice, actually. It's a room about half the size of this. It is lined with very small holding cells. There are no windows, no doors, no natural light. And when I say it's lined with holding cells, there can be anywhere from sort of 1 to 25 people in each of the cells. They have toilets with no privacy, and they have metal benches. This place, the IRC, is very hectic. It's very busy. It's tense. People are scared. The inmates are scared. They've just been detained. They are referred to as new fish by the deputies, by the sheriff's department, which means they are newly either detained, they're off the street. They may also be coming from court, anywhere, many courthouses throughout the county, and they're sort of initiated now into this jail setting. So it's really scary. It's scary for them. And interestingly, I think it's scary. It must be scary for those deputies. This is their first assignment. Once they finish the Sheriff's Academy, they go to jail. That's their first place. And once you get to jail, whichever jail you're in, your first assignment is going to be the Inmate Reception Center. So here are these youngsters. They've got uniforms. They've got badges. They've got guns. They have tear gas and pepper spray. And they're dealing with stressed out women coming off of drugs or coming off the street or coming from court where they've just gotten some bad news that they're going to be detained in jail. So, scary. What else? What does it look like? What does this program look like in the Inmate Reception Center? Well, interestingly, we have been able to count on, at this point, the deputies sending the clients to our testing station, which is a cart. It looks like a sort of a tea cart. That's what they used to call it. My grandmother had a tea cart where you could bring, you know, snacks. But this has locked drawers where we can keep our supplies. And it's 9 to 5, but it's 9 p.m. to 5 a.m. because that's when things get hot, and that's when things are busy, and that's when the intake process really happens in the jail. And so that's when our staff are there collecting collecting specimens. But when I painted this picture of a kind of scary, busy place with a lot of people and a lot of activity, you might have gotten the sense of what I'm about to tell you, which is that there is minimal confidentiality or chance for any kind of counseling. They can ask questions, and I've got two staff there the whole time and another half-time person there who are well prepared to answer whatever they can, but there's nothing individualized. And so that's a drawback, but you can't have everything. We keep logs, we get consent from each patient, and we collect urine and blood specimens for as many as we can. And what is it that we've found? Let's take a look. Okay, since we started with collecting the blood draws, I also wanted to mention about the staff that they are not licensed clinicians, although two of them are licensed to draw blood. They are community workers and very well prepared, but not nurses or physicians, and they do fine. So in this 15-month period, we tested 9,500 women for chlamydia and gonorrhea, with an overall prevalence of chlamydia of 13% and gonorrhea of 4%. About almost 4,000 were screened for HIV, detecting 25 new cases, and almost 4,000 were screened for syphilis, where we found 5% were confirmed positives, and 34 cases of early syphilis identified during that period. This is just another view of the positivity for chlamydia and gonorrhea. I think most people are aware at this point of the substantial prevalence among this population. And bear in mind, it's through age 30 that they're actually screened, so we're really recommending all of them. And you can see that the average prevalence for 18 and 19-year-olds, well, not the average, the prevalence is 22% for chlamydia. The blue is chlamydia, and the yellow is gonorrhea. And it does go down, but it doesn't go down that far, even at the quote unquote older women on the right side of the table. In addition, you might be surprised by this. This is a breakup by race ethnicity, and you can see at the top around that almost 14%, the whites, blacks, Hispanics have almost the same prevalence of chlamydia, and it's essentially very similar, hovering around 4 to 5% for gonorrhea. Basically, what this tells us is, the multiple problems that are in multiple risk factors of incarcerated women sort of supersedes some of the other disparities that are coming out down around race and ethnicity. Okay, treatment for all these positives. This is a big issue. Almost two-thirds of the chlamydia and gonorrhea cases are confirmed treated, and less than half were treated in custody. That means that by the time the test result was received from the laboratory, she was already gone. And that, people come in, and many of them are gone the next day or 2 or 3 days later, and so we'll have to follow them in the field, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that once we in the next slide. 33 of those 34 early syphilis cases were confirmed treated and received partner services as well. And every one of the HIV cases began treatment if she was still in custody with the sheriff's medical department. And if she was already released, we have very strong transitional case management and then sort of a handoff to care in the community. Okay, so some of the challenges. Sounds great, 10,000 people screened. What's really going on here, and how do you address some of the tough stuff? Well, you saw those treatment rates, and they're generally pretty low. We're not satisfied with 62% of the women, the chlamydia and gonorrhea cases getting treated. And why is this? I mentioned rapid discharge. Even if they're if we're hot on their trail immediately after release, as we do our best, they are highly transient, very difficult to find. You may or may not have experience with this, but trust me, it'll be familiar if you're working with anyone who's been incarcerated. We do, however, as you may have noticed, have excellent treatment for syphilis and HIV. It's a high priority for the jail custody staff and nursing staff, and we have a dedicated field worker from the STD program who tracks everybody and ensures treatment and partner services, and similar kind of partnership for this rapid referral for HIV. What are the solutions to this problem? Well, we've done our best. We work with the laboratory to minimize the turnaround time, to expedite reporting of results, and to get those as early as possible, which is 5:30 in the morning when the nurse arrives at the jail. So if anybody's still in custody, they get treated. In addition, we've implemented a fairly significant, substantial field-delivered therapy program, which is or expedited partner patient and partner therapy program in the county, which is something that we're allowed to do. We were on the legal part of the graph earlier. And that we initiate immediately after release. So we receive whatever release information is available from the nurse, which she gets from the Sheriff's Department. And in addition, at the time of specimen collection, we get any extra phone numbers, any extra places that she would like us to find her. Our staff are doing our best to let them know that we promise to get them treated as long as they promise to try and be available to us. In addition, once we find somebody in the field, we provide them with partner-delivered therapy and or other partner follow-up if that's necessary. Okay, another big challenge of working in this kind of system is dealing with a cultural setting, if you will, that's a little bit different from what we're accustomed to in public health. We have what I've talked about as competing agendas. Public health, our priorities are health and welfare of individuals and, of course, the community, whereas the highest priority of the detention system is security and control. And so how, then, do we respond to this, fairly significant challenge? And our solutions are fairly simple also, but take a lot of work, and that is with consistency and with strong communication. When you're in custody, when they're there rolling around the cart, you must always defer to security concerns. There could be a lockdown, there could be a lock-in, there could be an outburst. That takes priority, and we have to be flexible and accommodate when that happens. We've been at this for a while. I mean, 99, 2000, this is now 2008, we have had to cultivate and maintain relationships through all levels of the command. So it's important to enlist the assistance of captains and lieutenants and higher level deputies, but we also need those folks, those youngsters on the ground in IRC, funneling, sending us the clients and allowing us to be guests in that setting. And so that has been done by, it's not rocket science, face-to-face meetings, regular reporting back. So when we have a quarterly report, we don't just send it to CDC, we also send it to the sheriffs, and we also send it to the jail medical. And it really does carry a fair amount of currency if you just keep reminding people of the impact and the importance of this to all of us and the whole community. And like many bureaucracies, recognizing the support and the success in writing has been instrumental. And essentially normalizing. We heard about this morning from Dr. Douglas, and I think this will be a familiar concept. Once you've got an STD stop integrated into the process at the inmate reception center, it's there, and it's not going to go away unless one day the staff disappears. It's just, okay, this is part of it. So it's been key. And then this is another very familiar challenge that I'm sure all of you face, and that is limited and I might even say diminishing resources. So what have we done? Well, I love that pixie word. Today was, I think, the second time I've heard it. Program collaboration, working together. Break down the public health silos. Those are silos of data and surveillance and sort of sharing those ways, and they're also this concept applies to program implementation and services. One of the ways that we've addressed the funding issue challenge is that we ask multiple agencies to fund different aspects of the program. For example, all the HIV services, that is the testing and the case management and treatment, are funded by our AIDS program, which is a separate, a partner to us in the public health department. In addition, there is a working group that meets every month of all interested parties, and that includes public health, it includes the sheriff's department, it also includes the public defenders. And a lot of community-based organizations that are working both inside and outside the facilities. And they're all key players. And then in terms of really the key players on a day-to-day, there is literally day-to-day communication with the laboratory, with the jail nurse, with field staff, just nurturing. Okay, so what is the upshot in conclusion? This can be done. Integrated services, on-site, and in the community, a sort of continuous fluid program can be implemented. And how can it be done? Well, mostly by focusing, I think, on these common objectives and of using them as organizing principles to partner up. I mentioned working together, and every single one of these people has participated and often is asked to participate in this program on a daily basis. Thank you.
I just have a couple of logistical questions. So actually, where does the specimen collection actually take place?
Right there.
Okay, and then you mentioned the two community workers. These are public health department workers.
They are.
Okay.
One of them is paid through infertility. One of them is paid through syphilis elimination. This is another kind of like drawing from, you know, everything you got. Can inmates refuse the screening process? Absolutely. I didn't get to mention this, but once we added HIV testing, that was actually functioned as substantial incentive for the clients because of the anticipated required court-ordered HIV test that is coming. Normally, they're charged for it, and we offer, of course, the services free of charge, and we ensure that this is part of the partnership also with Public Defender, that the results are available to the court through proper request. So, yeah. Go ahead.
Just kind of a follow-up is, out of the number of women who are booked on whatever the year relationship, about how many of them actually get screened? Because I imagine some refuse and some might be intoxicated at the time or might be dangerous.
That's right. And in addition to, okay, so she just asked what proportion are actually screened of those who are admitted. And in addition to the problems of if someone refuses the test, which does happen, or if someone is unable to give a specimen because they're intoxicated or because they have behavior, you know, they're taken away, or there's also, we are not there 24 hours a day, and there is intake going on 24 hours a day, so it's limited. And we think that we're actually reaching about a third of the women, and we're hoping to improve. Well, we've had some. this is another opportunity to report back and to sort of acknowledge and recognize that those folks who are sitting at the bench doing the aliquoting testing, you know, at the Tigris, I'm sorry, in the lab, that they're playing an important role. And so we have done our best to sort of, again, report back to them and to urge them to prioritize the detention, both juvenile hall and adult jail, because of this issue that they're gone so fast. So, you know, it's again an ongoing challenge, but I feel like we've done well with it. There's just no way to get the result before 3 days, even if, just no way. And so that's when, you know, we've got half the women are gone by then. If they're not screened at intake, what sort of opportunity would they have to be screened later? If they're symptomatic, they could request They could request a test, and there's limited availability of HIV testing, although we are working with the Sheriff's Department Medical to improve that. There's very limited, and I think they're aware of it. This is a very well-received opportunity, and there's good uptake.
Treatment and referral rates for syphilis and HIV were much higher than for chlamydia, gonorrhea.
The treatment and referral was much stronger for syphilis and HIV, whereas it was poor with chlamydia and gonorrhea. Part of that is a question of volume. That's right. I mean, we had we have about 800 chlamydia cases annually, so we also don't have the resources to have all, each of those cases followed in the field, although we make a strong effort through the STD program, working with our DIS to locate. They're very difficult to find once they're released, and we do our best. We have a designated person, a DIS, to work on just syphilis and HIV in the jail, and so she gets, and she's highly trained. Numbers are much, much smaller.
Just because we're at the end of the session, I'd like to give all of our speakers a round of applause.